Hi, thank you. I'm going to give you some solutions to what we just saw. Those were great. I'm very excited about the outcome of our report. I have no relationships to disclose. I will be talking about the regulation of sugar-sweetened beverages at the federal, state, and local levels, touching on marketing, consumer protection, taxes, and alternative regulations. So I think we all know that the World Health Organization, the Institute of Medicine, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the American Psychological Association all suggest that we restrict marketing of unhealthy food and beverages to children. And countries around the world are starting to respond to these mandates. But what's going on in the United States? Our country has been focusing on self-regulation. We have the Child Food and Beverage Advertising Initiative, which, by the way, Coca-Cola says they don't market to children, which is, I loved what we just saw today. And we also had the Interagency Working Group on Food Marketing of Children, both of which I'm not going to address, but if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them in the question and answer. But the reason that our country is focusing so much on self-regulation is because we have the First Amendment of the United States, which is originally for purposes of political speech, religious speech, but for most part, for purposes of self-determination and governance. So people have a right to exchange ideas in the marketplace for purposes of government. In the 1970s, the United States Supreme Court determined that commercial speech or advertising, which is what we were talking about today, is also protected by the First Amendment. The industries that market to children believe they have a right to do so because of the First Amendment protection for commercial speech. The First Amendment does not protect false, deceptive, or misleading speech for profit. But the concept of protecting children is getting unclear. Some new Supreme Court cases are throwing into question the government's ability to protect children as opposed to the First Amendment's rights of the industry. Some new cases came out. They're not necessarily on marketing to children, but old cases showed that we could protect adults from overreaching by commercial entities making speech, but newer cases are throwing that into question. So the industry is functioning under this their thought of the authority and their marketing to children. I'm not going to focus on this. Again, I'd be happy to talk about it in the questions, but I would like to focus on what we do know. And what we do know is that you can restrict marketing in schools. Schools are government property, and you can do this through contracts or by viewpoint-neutral regulations. But now I'm going to leave marketing and go to areas that we can definitely regulate sugar-sweetened beverages without worrying about the First Amendment. First, I did say that false, deceptive, and misleading speech for profit is not protected by the First Amendment, and our government does try to deal with this. At the federal level, the FTC addresses unfair and deceptive acts and practices on the television, internet, and mobile marketing. The FDA is in charge of packaging. And at the state level, we have attorneys general who have their primary purpose to protect consumers, and they do this through restricting unfair and deceptive acts and practices. All 50 states and the District of Columbia have what are called UDAP statutes, which are unfair and deceptive acts and practices, under which the attorneys general can address misleading and deceptive marketing, and they do. These are two examples of the FTC's actions on beverages that have questionable claims or actually directly violate the regulations. So the FDA is active. They tend to just write letters to the companies and tell them to withdraw the products. I saw Diet Coke Plus pretty recently, even though the letter went out a couple years ago. But the FDA does have some regulations that are to address products and the lies that can be on products and kind of some of the questionable claims that that Marlene just showed us. The Nutrition Labeling and Education Act is the act under which the FDA regulates products in the marketplace. They are allowed to require factual information on products, and this is the act under which they are in charge of health and nutrition claims. So we all know if you've bought a beverage and looked at the beverage, that there's a nutrition facts panel on the beverage, and this is from the Nutrition Labeling and Education Act. But there are a lot of things missing that the FDA could really look at and revise to help us, especially with the claims such as the things that Marlene just talked about earlier. First of all, there's no requirement to disclose caffeine. We certainly should ask the FDA to require increased disclosures, and especially in the form of caffeine, and added sugar disclosures so parents and consumers know which sugars are added sugars and which are naturally occurring sugars. But the FDA could actually determine that some products just should only be limited to the amount of caffeine and added sugar they can put in the products, especially products directly marketed to children. They could actually limit the amount of caffeine and sugar that are allowed in those products. I would suggest that the FDA also create a daily recommended value for added sugar so consumers have an idea of how much added sugar they should be consuming. Currently, they have no guidance to know how much sugar that they added sugar they should be consuming. Also, I would suggest a disqualifying level of added sugar for industry to be able to make health and nutrition claims. Currently, we have a situation where products have enticing packaging, so children request the product, and then a health and nutrition claim appeases a parent who would not otherwise purchase the product. And we've even shown this through now studies that this is a really a problematic environment. We have disqualifying levels for sodium, cholesterol, and other nutrients, and certainly there should be one for added sugar. And finally, the FDA could really strengthen its definitions. There's almost no real definitions for beverages or or energy drinks, and we're seeing this now when it does come to energy drinks. The FDA put out non-binding guidance suggesting the industry which are beverages and which are energy drinks. Unfortunately, a lot of the energy drink manufacturers are not following this guidance, and they're calling themselves dietary supplements, and they put supplement facts panels instead of nutrition facts panels. But where this is really problematic is that when you call yourself a dietary supplement, you're no longer subject to the Nutrition Labeling and Education Act, but rather the Dietary Supplement Act. So these companies are making outrageous claims on their products without having the control of the FDA that would normally be over them if they were considering themselves beverages. So they are going against the FDA's guidance. So the FDA, it's time to have some actual restrictions on the use. And I'd like to show you an example of this in practice. Here's one company's beverages. They have Aqua, Sport, Dasonic, Bliss, and Sleep. And they say that some of these are beverages and some of them are dietary supplements. According to the FDA's guidance, all of these are beverages, but only two of them are claimed to be beverages, and the other ones, and including a whole other gamut of them, say that they're dietary supplements. So the FDA has the authority to go against these kind of products, claims, and issues, but also the attorneys general do. There have been a few cases with the attorneys general banding together to write letters to companies. This is Pabst's fruit-flavored malt beer that was using Snoop Dogg to market basically to youth. And the attorneys general banded together and wrote a letter and said, this is Binge-in-a-Can. There are 5 servings of alcohol in this can, and they wrote letters to the company. Well, they should maybe consider doing the same for energy drinks. These are non-resealable 16 to 24-ounce containers. They contain up to 2 levels of the amount of sugar of regular soda and up to 5 times the amount of caffeine as regular soda. And this could certainly be an area for not only federal action, but also attorney general action. Now, the federal and state governments also have the authority to institute excise taxes. The purpose would be to alter the price, because currently the price of sugar beverages are well below the consumer price index and well below the price of healthy food. And also the value of using an excise tax is that you can earmark the tax for public health purposes. We have a long history of excise taxation in this country. 2 years after the Constitution was ratified, in 1791, we had the nation's first excise tax on whiskey. Alexander Hamilton said that he wanted to enact this tax to diminish the consumption of the national extravagance. And I think today we can all agree that sugary beverages fall under that category and could be perfect subjects for such a tax. We could also institute minimum price laws to make sure that the products do not get trade discounts and prohibit trade discounts, and there's a lot of ways that states can do this. And at the state and local level, they are responsible for retail and food service establishments. Their police power covers the ability to address public health, safety, and welfare. And in this context, they can regulate sale and location of products, which is called conduct, and not subject to the First Amendment. The Supreme Court had suggested ideas to regulate conduct instead of regulating speech. Taxation is one of them, and there are a few others, including limiting per capita purchases, banning or limiting harmful ingredients or the product themselves, age limits to purchase, possess, or use the product, restrict access to the product, and increase information. And in public health, we see this already happening. And we have per capita ephedrine-containing product restrictions to purchase, so you have to sometimes go get Sudafed and sign in, and you can only get one amount of Sudafed at a time. Some of the states have banned the Four Loko. It's a caffeine alcohol beverage. Minors cannot purchase alcohol and tobacco. We have states have behind-the-counter restrictions on tobacco and other products. Another access barrier is that San Francisco recently banned tobacco in pharmacies, and the Ninth Circuit upheld this. And menu labeling laws are an example of increased information. So as applied to sugar-sweetened beverages, you could limit per capita purchases for children. You can limit serving sizes. Oregon had a bill on this topic. You could restrict the sale of harmful energy drinks. The former Connecticut Attorney General wrote a letter to the maker of cocaine energy drink and said that we don't want it on the shelves of Connecticut, and they complied. But we could also do this through legislation. You could have age limits. New York, actually, a local legislator had a bill about restricting the purchase of energy drinks to minors under 19. You can restrict access in and near schools through zoning and conditional licensing agreements. You can enact junk food-free checkout aisles, and you can require factual signs at the checkout aisle. This is a form of government speech. It could be just simply say how many teaspoons of sugar are in each product or the health effects of consuming these products. So I thank you, and I look forward to your questions.